Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Betascape podcast. I'm so excited to have our special guest on today's episode, Mr. Jason Armstrong, artist, writer, solosexual, autosexual. Am I missing anything here? But welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me on the Betascape podcast. I'm so thrilled to have you.
It's so nice of you to ask me to come on. Thanks a lot.
Of course. The reason why I was extra excited, because your book, The Portrait of a Solosexual, was one of the first reading materials I ever picked up on my solosexual journey.
Wow.
Yeah. And that
Thank
was about...
Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. That was about, I want to say, 5-6 years ago, I think.
Yeah, because I published the book 6 years ago now.
Yeah, and I remember someone pointing me to BaitWorld, and then I believe like your book kind of showed up on the side, like it was like advertised as like this book reading material to read, and I was like, oh, I'm going to click that because I feel like that would be a good starting point, and then there you were.
Right. I'm glad you clicked.
Yeah, I'm I clicked too. And I've since offered that book to other people who are starting on their solo sexual journey. So it's been a really great reference material for people that are just starting out.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, that means I have to buy you a bottle of wine because I probably made some residual payments for the books.
I'm happy. I'm so happy to do it. But let's start there. I'm so interested. What compelled you to write that book?
When a friend turned me on to baitworld.com,
yep,
and my world exploded as I realized that I was a solo sexual. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I like to read about sexuality. And so I went on Amazon and I did a search for the word solo sexual, and only two things came up. One, I don't even remember because it was so abstract. And the other was actually a book of erotica for about masturbation. Mm. So it was fiction.
Yeah.
So there was nothing written. And I thought, well, Toni Morrison, the Nobel-winning writer.
Yeah.
She's quoted as saying that if there's a book you want to read and it hasn't been written yet, you must write it yourself. So that was it.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember, again, when I first started, I was looking for material myself. And at the time, I was kind of like, oh, this all, it just really felt to me that everything was shrouded in secrecy. Like kind of like being a solo sexual was a secret that nobody really wanted to talk about. It was almost as if no one wanted to discuss it. And there you were with this book being advertised on the side, like, hey, this is a portrait of exactly what a solo sexual could be or is. And I was so fascinated by that idea.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really sweet.
But you've since written other books. And the most current book that I read was The Happy Hypersexual.
Yep.
Which I found super interesting. And then I just started reading Solo Sexual on Prep, I believe. That's what it's called.
Oh, that's the middle book, the second book.
Yeah.
It's Getting Off the Unlikely Chronicles of a Solo Sexual on Prep.
Yes, that's a great title.
Oh, it's a little wordy, maybe.
No, it's totally perfect. I think it's a great, it's very eye-catching. But have you always been a writer? Is that something? Because reading your books, I believe you were trained in theater.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in my 40s now, but I spent my 20s working in the theater. Yeah. Mm. And I went to theater school in New York, and yeah.
Yeah. And I remember you were there for about a year. You never went to a single audition.
Exactly. Because I was seduced by jazz and men.
And I love that story. I love that story about you were just like, I'm gonna fuck it. I'm just gonna go to these like orgy parties and see what's gonna happen to me.
Yeah.
Which is so great. But I'm fascinated to know, and I'm always curious to know about solo sexuals and people who are discovering the side of them. When did that really start for you? I'm curious to know, like, what your childhood growing up, your teenage years, like, how all that affected your sexuality.
Well, I always, always loved masturbating. Mm-hmm. But I never, in my wildest thoughts, I never imagined that that could be my sexual identity. So I went on a spree for years and years of hooking up and not really thinking it gelled well for me. And I never knew why. And I felt like maybe I was doing something wrong. And I never really wanted to get into a relationship. And why was that? And then when I discovered Bait World in 2013.
When you're talking about all these, like, when you're curious about all these things in your life, when did that start? Like, around what age did you start questioning all of this?
Well, that's the thing, is I don't think I did question it. I just assumed that I had to find a partner and have partnered penetrative sex like everybody else.
But when did that shift for you? Like, when did you start saying, like, I don't really like to have penetrative sex, I don't really want a partner? Around what age did that come into your mind?
Oh, it honestly didn't come into my mind at all until I found Bait World. I was trained by society to just assume that I wasn't doing it right until I found a partner and had partnered penetrative sex. And mm-hmm. yeah,
that's so interesting. And how did you come across Bait World?
Well, see, I was, you know, hooking up, and I started a blog, and the blog was called Hunting for Sex: Cautionary Tales from the Quest. It's defunct now. I don't use it, but there was a reader who said, for a blog about hunting for sex, you really do talk about masturbation a lot. And he said, you might like this site. It's called baitworld.com. And I don't even think I checked it out right away. I think I just put it on the shelf and thought, oh, whatever, another site. Yeah, because I didn't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you did start to get into Bait World, how did that resonate with you? How did that land with for you? Like, you have this, now you have this world of masturbators.
Yeah. Well, it was like finding out who I was. And the validation was thrilling. Mm-hmm. And that friend who hooked me up with baitworld.com, he said, I'm not even going to hear from you for 6 months, because it'll take you that long to get through everything that Bait World has to offer. And I know it sounds like I'm shilling for Bait World, and maybe I am, because it changed my life.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way too. I'm always just like, oh, Bait World's a really good place to start. That was probably the catalyst for why I even started the podcast in the first place, because like you, there was something that I needed to say that I wasn't getting. Again, I think for me, it all just seemed so secretive, and I could still sense there was a lot of shame, because to me, Bait World was like, oh, it was like Facebook for masturbators. And so I was proud to like want to show my face and like show my sex and like really have these conversations and meet people. But the only energy I ever got back was this like, show me your dick, or let's jerk off on Zoom, without even knowing each other. And I just never sat right with me.
Okay, gotcha.
But as I like maneuvered my way through the website, I was just like, there's nothing really here that I find exciting. Mm-hmm. To me as a solo sexual. And so I was just like, oh, I should just make this podcast. And so it was, for me, it was an outlet to be like, well, here's information that really resonates with me, that I feel like others can benefit from too.
Oh yeah, that's wonderful. That's great.
How do you feel how do you get feedback from your books? How do you gauge the impact that your work has on the community?
I do get a lot of emails from readers, either or messages on Twitter from people who have read the book. So I like to copy and paste and save them for when I'm 90 years old and it's all over for me, and I can read the nice things that people have said to me.
That's so nice.
So that's how I gauge it, pretty much.
That's cool. And what's been the feedback?
Well, the biggest burst of feedback was for the first book, for Solo Sexual Portrait of a Masturbator. It was kind of it felt like a watershed moment. And so that garnered the most attention, I think. Yeah. And even after all these years, it still sells as well as the new books. So, which almost disappoints me, because each book is like your child, and yeah. You don't want one child to be favored.
Yeah.
You want everyone to love all your children.
No, I totally agree. And there's a very distinct style of writing that you have.
Okay. Scared me for a second.
Not at all. I just feel like there's a lot. I love how you question yourself in a way that asks the readers to question that of themselves too. It's like you'll find yourself in a situation and then you'll ask yourself, it's like, was it the right thing to do? How did this impact me? Well, what have I done have repercussions? And so it leaves the reader thinking, well, will it? I want to know. And so you kind of like have this world of like, well, what happened to him in that situation?
Oh,
it's nice. It makes me feel as if I'm in your head with you, because you write it out, these thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that on purpose, or is that just a way that you feel like you write?
Mm. Well, you know what? I'm just tickled pink that you said all that. Like, when this podcast is over tonight, I'm just gonna do a little happy dance, because what I really wanted to do was write in a way that was accessible to people, and that took them on a journey that hopefully wasn't me just navel gazing, but hopefully trying to find the universal in the personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope.
No, you did. You certainly did. So it's really great that, I'm going through my Kindle and I have highlighted all these passages. But it's great because all the passages pretty much end in question marks, which is really cool.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
That's what you...
That's what I highlighted.
Highlighted, yes.
Yeah, for sure. But let's see here. So I'm quoting here from The Happy Hypersexual, which is so great. It says here, where was that quote? Oh, right. So you refer to Xavier Hollander's classic book, The Happy Hooker, My Own Story. And she says that for some people, having sex is like washing one's hands. It's just something you do, perhaps often, but give little to no thought. And then I highlighted here, and then there are those for whom sex is the holy grail, the alpha and the omega. That's me, the latter.
Yeah.
When did you discover that about yourself? When did you feel that sex became the holy grail for you?
Well, I have to ask you, have you read the chapter in The Happy Hypersexual called Times Square?
Yeah, I believe so. I read the whole thing.
Okay. So in that chapter, I go to an orgy for the first time, and yes. It was so mind-blowing. And I think that's when I realized that sexuality was going to take a huge, it was going to be a big, big part of my learning and self-development. And I think that was the moment things sort of shifted. I was going to say something really profound and I lost it.
That's all right. Maybe it'll come back to you. But I did that too. Like, I feel like I had my own sexual adventures when I was like my early 20s. Like, I often I put myself in situations in which I wanted to experiment, because I too was questioning my sexual identity at a younger age. Like, I feel like in my early 20s, I was kind of doing all the things that I thought I was supposed to do sexually. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Like, just based on what friends told you, or the porn I was watching, or the bars, the clubs I was visiting, like just the overarching conversation was just like, oh, as a gay man, you got to go out there and fuck everything you can. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it was kind of like, well, how can I do that? And so then I started cruising, right? Mm-hmm. And so like you, I started, was like, oh, I should go to this orgy. I should do this thing. But when I look back on those sexcapades, I just never felt right for me somehow.
Right. I understand that very well.
Okay. Yeah. It wasn't just like, I don't know, like it wasn't comforting to me. It wasn't exciting. I was kind of like, this isn't for me. This is for the masses. But I just felt I was so particular. I was going to say peculiar, but I felt like that has a negative connotation. that I was just like, I don't know what this other thing is, but like you, I've always really enjoyed masturbating. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of like, okay, let me just focus on this. And I think once I finally tapped into like what felt good for me, then I was comfortable deviating from like the most popular path of sex. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I, you know, I can't help wondering, because, you know, now that we have so many labels, whether it be solosexual, autosexual, pornosexual, I wonder if there's really a lot of people who deviate from what's expected of a person in our society, in our culture, sexually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find that those people I resonate the most with, I feel like, I don't know, like I just feel like solosexuals are kind of like, we're kind of like the punks of sex. It's very punk rock to be, I feel, solosexual, because it's not the norm. It's like deviating the idea of like, well, I don't need to stick anything in you to have a really great time. I have it myself.
I know, you know, I really relate to that, because in one of my books, I say something about how masturbation to me is rock and roll.
Yes. I love this idea of you like drinking these whiskeys and like watching these porns. And I highlighted a part where there's this really great passage where you lay a mirror on the ground and you lay on top of this mirror.
Yes.
Tell me about that. That seems dangerous.
Oh, I know. I know. Like, praise the Lord, it never broke. Yeah. Can you imagine? But yeah, I would lay a big mirror on my hardwood floor, and I would lay on it and hump it and kiss myself and piss myself. And can I say that on the podcast?
Totally.
Oh, absolutely. Good. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And that is the sort of autosexual side of me.
Okay, I want to really talk to you about being autosexual, because when I was book, I was like, this is really resonating with me.
Oh, yeah.
And so I am starting to really now admire my nudes and my sexual videos and things that I post in a way that I had never had before.
Oh, wow.
So for you, was being autosexual, do you think it's something that you were innately born as and discovered later? Or was that something you discovered along in your solo sexual journey? Or, well, I'll let you answer that question, because I have more questions about that.
Well, you know what? Again, without ever having heard the term autosexual, which is essentially about being sexually turned on by your own image.
Yeah.
And maybe your own smells and your own, you know, all that good stuff. I've always been a mirror baiter, watching myself bait in the mirror. What's kind of funny is the videos that I have of myself baiting on Baitworld and other sites, I never watch those.
Hmm.
It's the mirror.
So is it every time you bait, you always have to have a mirror with you? Is that what's happening?
Two mirrors.
Two? Well, how are those set up? Are they just set up in front of you, or?
There's one right directly in front of me, and there's one to my right there.
Oh, wow. That's so fascinating.
Yeah. I know one guy who said that he had three, and he set it up so that he could see, like, endless images of himself.
What do you think that does for us?
Well, you know, I think it's, in my opinion, it's about loving yourself. Because I don't profess to be a porn star gorgeous. I think I look like an average Joe. But when I'm baiting, I feel really gorgeous.
Yeah, as you should.
Oh, yeah, everyone should.
Everyone should. And that's something they always try to communicate. I'm just like, love yourself enough to get off on yourself. And I've had a previous chat with another guest, and he was like, yeah, listen, every man is born with a dick, with nipples, a butthole, and your balls, essentially, and your hands. Like, you don't really need anyone else to give you any kind of sexual experience. You can essentially just give that to yourself.
Right.
And so, yeah.
The only, you know, one question that comes to mind that I didn't even consider when I wrote the book, is about, I remember reading an article about a straight man who only masturbated in the dark because he didn't want to see his cock. He wanted to think of vagina.
Huh.
Yeah. So I don't know about that one.
That's so interesting. So, like, the idea of, like, looking down at your cock, what made him not...
It turned him off. He wanted to see, in his mind's eye, a woman.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
Do you think you could be a solo sexual and not be attracted to your own cock?
Oh, my goodness. I think I have to write another book. These are good questions. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to really think about that.
Yeah, I just thought of that question myself, and I was like, God, that's something I'd really have to noodle on. Because I just feel like, I mean, for me personally, like, I'm at a point now where I've gotten so deep in my bait. And I was just talking to a friend, the friend that lives in Toronto.
Oh.
We were talking about being autosexuals, and we came out to each other as on the autosexual spectrum.
When was this?
This is just like, maybe it was even this morning or a couple of days ago. I feel it might have been like, yeah, it's very recent. And the reason why it resonated with so much because of your book. It was actually one of the first times that I ever kind of read the term. And I thought, God, I feel like that's me, because in the past couple of months, the only thing that's really getting me off are my own videos.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
So interesting. I'm just floored.
But I think it's a work in progress, because I want to get to the point where you are. Like, I do have full-length mirrors. I'm looking at both of them now. But I don't often use them in my bait, and that's because I deal with my own body dysmorphia. It's things that I need to work out in my own trauma. But I do bait in front of a mirror, and I have done that as a practice of self-loving my body. It's just like integrating or embedding the image of my own appearance as being sexual.
Right.
Yeah, which was a process for me. Was it a process for you too? Or did you always be like, were you always like, I love myself, I'm hot?
No, because even when I'm dating, I have my moments where I look in the mirror and I go, oh, Jason, that's not good. You gotta get back to the gym more often, or, you know, stupid stuff like that, you know.
Sure, so, we all have those. Yeah, we all have that.
Yeah, it would be hyperbole to say that I'm always turned on by myself, but because for me, masturbation is so much about self-love and joy, mm-hmm. it's usually a good experience in the mirror. Usually. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as it should be, I feel like, listen, if you got the mirror out and you're turning yourself on, like, even if you don't, even if you wear something that hides pieces of your body that you don't want to see, at least you're just looking at yourself. Like, the image that's reflected back to you is still present. Does that make sense?
I think that makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
Like, you're still noticing yourself as, like, this solo sexual being in front of you.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, like you said, so much of this is secretive and still in the closet. And and I think by talking about it, we give it some validation. And so I'm so glad we're having this podcast. This is wonderful. What a wonderful podcast. I'm having a blast.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And I think that's part of the, again, that's part of the reason why I wanted to showcase it in a way. Because to me also too, like, I don't know, for some reason I had this idea of like solo sexuals as being like these like underground kind of seedy beings. And I was just like, wait, that's, that doesn't resonate at all with me. Like, I'm a fully realized human.
Yeah.
I have a full-time job. I love art. I read books. I cook dinner. Like, I'm into all this stuff. So like, I was just like, to me, being solo sexual is really a celebration of your own sexuality. It doesn't have to be this hidden underground things that we do in the dark.
Right, a freak in the basement or something, you know, like,
yes,
right? Exactly. Can I tell you something kind of funny?
Yes.
When I was writing the first book, I showed a chapter to somebody, and you know what they said to me? They said, you shouldn't really use such big words because, you know, these are masturbators. And I thought, what the hell does that mean?
Oh, that's so bizarre.
The masturbators, are we dim-witted? Because we come too much or something?
Yeah, are we not capable of understanding a big word? That's bizarre. Right. That is so odd. Well, I'm glad you didn't do that.
No, I like words. I like playing with words. I like words.
Yes, I can see that as in this conversation. You speak quite elegantly about masturbation
and when thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. What has been your training in terms of writing? What did you study how to write, or is that something that just came naturally to you?
You know what it is? I think the drama training that I had it's such a transferable skill. Because even though my books are memoir, I still have to think about character development, the character being me. And it's the truth, but I still have to make it interesting. I have to make it logical. There has to be a narrative arc, all those things to make it work. So, but I also, when I started the blog years and years ago, I think back in 2011, I read a lot of books about writing memoir in particular.
Okay, so that was helpful.
Mm-hmm. Very, yeah.
I wanted to get back to the autosexual thing. So I was talking to a friend, and I was kind of coming out to him and saying, I was like, I think I'm on the autosexual spectrum. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, isn't that the same as solo sexual? And I thought, well, I don't know. Is it one of the same, or are they different? Because I feel like as a solo sexual, again, you're in love with your sex, so you're in love with the image. That's why I asked you the question, can you be a solo sexual and not be attracted to your cock? Because I feel like that's kind of like that's the holy grail, right? That's in between your legs.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're in love with that, then you have to be on this autosexual spectrum. Or is it more in depth to be autosexual?
I think that all autosexuals are probably solo sexuals, but not all solo sexuals are autosexuals. They might be a pornosexual where their focus is on porn only. And in the chapter on autosexuality, I did a poll on Baitworld, are you an autosexual? And there was one guy, and I quoted him in the book, and he said, For years and years, I was attracted to myself, but around age 40, I lost my attraction to myself, but we're still friends. So I thought that was cute.
No, that's really great. Yeah, I mean, I yeah, that's no, that's really great when you think of it. I mean, the reason why it's so funny because I had an artist commission a rendering of my cock, and I just recently printed that out, and it's hanging in my bathroom. So every time I take a piss, I look at this image of my cock, and I fucking love it. And then just recently, a couple of days ago, I printed out, I'm a photographer by trade. I went to school of photography.
Oh, okay.
And I take these images of myself because here I am, you know, trying to brand whatever I'm doing, like my sex coaching and my bait coaching, all this stuff. And I was like, well, I'm a photographer and I have education and training and marketing. And so I was taking these images of myself, but I was like, why haven't I printed any of these out for myself? And I started really kind of assessing, like, what is it about myself that I don't feel valuable enough to keep images of myself around the home? Like, I had so much shame about it.
What do you do when your mother comes over?
She does it.
Oh, okay. And my mother lives in another city, so that's kind of helpful. I'm liking this idea.
But even, I just felt like even then, even if these images exist, like, I wouldn't be ashamed of them. Like, that, I think that's another turning point for me in my solo sexual journey, I'm trying to de-shame now my autosexuality and say to myself, primarily, because this is my home, my space, this is my masturbatorium.
Yes, right? I'm in mine.
Yes, exactly. And to think to myself, well, if I love myself this much, then I should have pictures of myself everywhere because that's how I get turned on.
Oh, so it's been a
really interesting transition in my mind into believing that I'm worthy enough of having these sexy images of myself displayed, because people do it all the time. They do it with their dogs, they do it with their family, they do it with their husbands, love it, whatever. And I was like, well, I'm gonna do it of me.
Right. I love that idea.
And so I made like magnets. Now they're on my fridge. And it's like me hanging out and I have this image here. So like that's where I'm kind of at in my autosexual journey.
Wow. I think that's a great idea. I had never thought of doing something like that. But now I think you got my wheels turning.
Yeah. I think everyone should take really sexy nudes of themselves and like print them out and display them as art.
Right. Right.
It'd be really exciting for people to see what that would do for them.
Wow.
But transitioning here, I'm quoting another, I have this book, The Happy Hypersexual by Jason Armstrong.
Thank you.
it's a wonderful book. And you know what we're going to do really quickly? We're going to take a quick break for a really short sponsor. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you about this really curious line I highlighted here.
Okay,
cool. We'll be right back, y'all. And we're back. All right. Thanks so much for listening to that. So here I have this quote here and it says, am I a priest of the bait or am I a demon? That was so fascinating to me because I feel like, I think you were fascinated by men who identified probably as masturbation and porn addicts. But he said he'd encountered enough men from masturbating to porn had become a problem who couldn't find a way to balance it with, quote, normal life. Do you feel as solo sexuals, it could be a tricky road to being addicted to the bait?
It could be. I think anything in life could be overdone. We might eat too much, smoke too much, drink too much, and maybe bait too much. But on the other hand, I also caution people to think, is my sex life, whatever it is, do I feel concerned about my sex life because of what society thinks or because of what I actually think? And I'm going to be the determiner of whether I think I'm overdoing it. Rather than let society tell me, or a therapist tell me, or a priest tell me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's fair enough, but I'm curious to know, like, how do you gauge it? I feel like it's so individualistic.
Yeah, it is. Because remember that funny quote, a slut is anybody who has sex more than you?
Yes.
Right. So I think everyone has a different level of libido. And
True. I like the word slut.
I love it.
I feel like
I'm a bait slut. I am my cock slut.
Yeah, I am my cock slut too. I just I've been having, so the reason why I asked that question and highlighted it too is because you use the word priest, which anytime I hear that word, it conjures up religion in my mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did you ever have any kind of curious to know, were you raised religious?
I was, and okay. It was horrible in the sense that it's not that my parents really, you know, shoved it down my throat, but I, as a young child, I knew that I was different. I knew that I was gay, and the idea of burning in hell, oh boy. So instead of seeing religion as a panacea, for me it was just terror. For years and years it was terror, and the only thing that stopped me from being afraid, and what helped me leave stop going to church, was falling in love in high school. And the feeling was so pure, so golden, so glorious. I knew it wasn't bad in God's eyes, whoever God is.
Yeah. That's a beautiful story.
Oh, thank you.
I too did have, like, I had a really hard time growing up in a religious household. It brought up a lot of different trauma.
Right.
But the reason why I asked that is because I was talking to a friend recently, and I was just like, another part of my journey now is really turning to masturbation as a religion.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And when I first started on this whole sexual journey, I was always so cautious of men who use terms like hail cock or worship cock or God is cock, because I was still so entrapped with the idea of this religion that I was raised in.
Yes.
And so it's funny, I'll pull up the questions now, but some of the questions that I was asking my babe brother that I was conflicted about was just like, I don't know how to, what will that say of me when I shift over to a brand new religion, when this God that I was taught to worship is no longer my savior? What does that then say about who I am? Does that make God angry that we are worshiping something other than who he is?
Idolatry, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And my friend was just like, I believe you're going through a shame spiral.
Right.
And I was like, I probably am.
You know, it's funny. I think when I'm worshiping my cock, that I'm worshiping the universe, because I kind of feel like the universe is in my cock.
I really resonate with that too. And so I was just kind of talking to him, and I was like, I don't think I'm going in a shame spiral. I think what I'm trying to do is kind of crawl out of this shame, like, ditch.
Yeah.
Essentially, because I'll be honest, and I just tweeted last night, it was a single tweet, and the tweet was, masturbation raised me. And I really feel that it really did in so many ways. Not only did it raise me, I really truly feel like masturbation saved my life.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I really do. I really understand. That's so profound. When you say masturbation raised you, you mean raised your spirit?
Yeah, it raised everything. It raised my self-love. It raised my confidence. It raised my sexuality. It raised my relationships with myself, with my friends. It raised my money, because it all ties back into this idea of self-love and self-worth. I love myself enough to give me that pleasure. I'm worth giving myself this pleasure. And so when you take that energy and you apply it to different aspects of your life, you can then say, well, masturbation did that for me. Because if I'm worthy enough to give myself this self-pleasure, I'm worthy enough to ask for that raise.
Wow. Or
I'm worthy enough to ask that guy out on a date.
Right.
But so masturbation now is a baseline. It's the fundamentals of how I exist now.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Amen. You're preaching to the choir. Again, a religious connotation there, but
yeah, no, definitely. And so I think that's where I'm at now in my life, where it's like, yeah, I think I'm slowly starting to believe that masturbation just, it's my new religion, and how I de-shame, and how I, it's going to affect everything, who I pray to. Cause I feel like I'm a spiritual person. Can I say that of you? Spiritual?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure.
And so it's like de-learn or unlearning this old religion that never served you, and now you're teaching yourself a brand new religion.
I understand for sure.
Yeah.
I was in high school and fell in love with that guy. I felt like I had to actually tear down, dismantle everything I thought I knew to be true about the universe and God, and rebuild from scratch.
Yeah, and that's scary, right?
And it was scary because I wasn't out. So I had no one to talk to about this. It was all internal.
So how did you even process that?
Time takes care of it slowly. Eventually you come out to someone and you start trusting people with that truth, and there's a dialogue that starts to happen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I feel like time and research, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think it's up to us to kind of like go out there and kind of access information that feels valuable to us. Which again, I'm so thankful that the yearbook exists, because there's such beautiful material that soul sexuals can really resonate with. So thank you for providing that. And then also, again, like, this podcast is another reason why I'm just like, here it is. Like, who knows who it's going to touch? Like, maybe you, like, sometimes I get messages from people, but ultimately the impact that it can create, I have no idea, but I have faith in my masturbation.
Yes.
that it's going to impact someone somewhere.
And it's certainly impacting me tonight.
I'm so glad. You're very, it's so funny speaking to you now. It's such a different person than what I thought the person would be that wrote these books.
Oh, I think that's usually the case, isn't it? Like,
I think so too. I think that's the power of literature, where you can interpret it in a way that makes sense to you. Like, you have this voice in your head of what this narrative could be.
Right. Yeah.
it's really cool, like, talking to you now and like having read your book. I'm just like, wow, you're such an interesting person. Like, if I'd seen you on the street, I would have never known.
Right. thank you so much.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, I just send it all right back to you, because I feel the same way. I'm not just blowing smoke. I really, it's been so far just lovely. I mean, I wish I had a conversation like this with someone every day.
I was going to ask you, what do you do that? What is your social life in terms of like bitterness? Are you meeting baiters or?
Not really. Lately I really have just been really quite solo sexual, porno sexual, but I'm really active on Bait World and on Twitter. And so I have a number of friends, you know, internet friends. I don't know them personally or have met them, but we're very like-minded and our conversations just feed each other. And yeah,
I feel the same way too. I feel like I can spot out some kind of baiters in my local area, but I feel like the most profound relationships that I'm currently creating are all over the world.
Oh yeah, all over the world. I mean, wow, the internet was such a game changer.
I know, I love the internet.
Me too.
The internet is amazing. You can find out so much information, and it's all really great and amazing. It's so wonderful. What would be something that you would love baiters everywhere to take away from this podcast interview? Any final wisdom that you want to bestow to our listeners?
Yes, I do have something. It's a Bette Midler quote.
Okay.
Well, no, it's not a quote. It's a description of Bette Midler's stage persona. Her stage persona is raunchy, lewd, vulgar, but full of joy. And I think that's what baiting is for me. And maybe baiting can be like that for others as well.
I like it. I love it so much. Well, I have to say, it was such a pleasure to talk to you. I want everyone to go and follow Jason. You can follow him on Twitter, and his handle is wildhorse1001.
Yes.
Why Wild Horse?
Oh, you know what? It's such a non-story. My sister is part Native, and her Native, we had different dads. So I ended up half German. She's half Native. Yeah. But her Native name is Wild Horse. And she got into online dating when it first started. She's older than me. And she said, oh, you got to get on online dating. And I said, what would I name myself? And she said, well, you got to think of something. And I couldn't. So I just borrowed hers and added some numbers after it.
That works.
She was looking for straight men. I was looking for gay men. So I didn't think they would ever cross paths.
I love it. It sounds great. And then also too, you're on baitworld.com under wildhorse100.
Yes.
Great. And then people can pick up your books where, and what are those books called?
All right. So the first book is Solo Sexual Portrait of a Masturbator. Second book is Getting Off. The Unlikely Chronicles of a Solo Sexual on PrEP. And the last book, The Happy Hypersexual, and they're on Amazon.
Yeah, they're amazing books. Go get them. I have them on my Kindle. They're amazing. Thank you so much again for this interview. I had such a pleasure talking to you.
I had a blast. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me.
Of course. You're welcome. everyone, you all can follow me on my socials, Beastly Baiter. You know where to look. Again, thanks everyone for taking a listen to this podcast. I've enjoyed speaking to Jason today so very much, and I will see you.
Hey, sexy. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Bait Escape. As a friendly reminder, I am a current sex coach and training in the Somatica method. If you're interested in my coaching services, send me a message at beastlybaiter@gmail.com.